can we apply engineering to dog training? Thank you for listening in on this podcast, where Margot Bowerman will share her insights on the critical elements that are necessary to teach problem solving to young people. My name is Carrie Rabideau, and I'm an extension educator with the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development, and you are listening to the Youth Development Podcast. Margot, this is your first time joining me in this podcast, and I'm thrilled that we're able to incorporate a very important dog in your life, Ori, into this conversation.
Thanks for having me, Carrie. I'm excited to be here. Anytime I can bring my dog into my work is a bonus.
Well, let's keep going with that. If you would please share with us your work, and since he's the star of this podcast and of the concept of what you are talking about today, tell us about your dog, Ori, as well.
All right. Well, thanks. I consider myself a scientist. I've loved science ever since I can remember. And what I enjoy doing here at the University of Minnesota Extension is working with youth and adults to help them enjoy science and engineering and see how it weaves into every part of their life. And my dog, Ori, he's 7 years old. He's a German Shepherd. He's a big guy. He's also a little bit of a crutch for me. For me, as much as I'm an introvert, he's an extrovert, so he can do all the work when he's with me. And that's my guy.
Very good. And tell us more about what you do for us at the Center for Youth Development.
So I'm in the Crookston Regional Office, and I'm a regional educator. So I get the pleasure of working with a variety of 4-H youth development programs in Northwest Minnesota and get to work with the talented staff and volunteers and young people involved in 4-H.
Now, along those lines, you wrote a blog post in our Youth Development Insight blog. And for those who listen to this podcast series, we often have people who have written those blog posts also talk about it in this podcast, because you can expand on it and give us even more information than you were able to cover in the blog itself. The blog I'm referring to was about applying engineering design to dog training. And I would like to mention it was a very popular blog post, and it had a lot of comments and interaction from our youth development colleagues. I think that metaphor struck a chord with a lot of people, and it was like, yes, I can really relate to that. So I'm excited that you'll be able to tell us more about that. Tell us the story about Ori and how training led him to you thinking about how problem solving teaching.
I'm really excited to tell this story in person, because it just doesn't have as impact in words as it did for me personally. It really was powerful for me. I was teaching him a new type of training where you teach him to make the choice, and you don't give him any feedback. You just let him know when he makes the right choice. And so and this was done with the food in my hand and food on the floor, and he needed to leave that food alone until I gave it to him. So that was pretty tough concept for him to learn. And I think he's pretty smart, and I was pretty excited he picked that up quickly. But as we moved on to a more difficult topic, and he just couldn't get it. And in fact, he just stopped trying and looked at me. And it kind of broke my heart, because I could see him just giving up. And he looked at me like, tell me what to do. And that was the epiphany for me, the pivotal moment when I realized my training for the first 7 years of his life was telling him what he should do and telling him when he did it correctly and when he did it wrong. And then when I was giving him the choice to figure it out on your own, what you need to do and which is the right choice, he gave up. And I thought, boy, that's a powerful skill that we're also teaching to our young people, that when we teach them problem solving, we're equipping them to make those decisions and figuring it out for themselves. And I hope people don't do what Ori did, but I can imagine it happening when you don't have those skills and you're faced with difficult choices or a difficult problem, you just give up. So that really made our problem solving work seem really important to me, and to really get to know what is it. When we're teaching problem solving, what are those key things, or how do you make it happen? How do you make it work so that kids don't give up and they keep trying and they find success?
And in the blog post, you described 4 critical elements necessary to do this. And the 4 that you highlighted were, first, a system, second, feedback, third, time, and 4th, team. Would you walk us through each of those, starting with the system?
Sure. And the system for me, if I look at both science and engineering, they are about systems. They're a systematic way in science to acquire knowledge, or in engineering, it's a systematic way to solve a problem, typically a human problem. And so we've really been focused in Minnesota 4-H these last few years on teaching engineering and engineering design to young people. And I love these activities because they provide an opportunity for young people to solve a problem and within multiple ways to solve it. So there's never a right answer, but there's a best solution. And it gives them those opportunities to try different things. But we teach them the engineering design process, which is a system of identifying the problem, identifying what your constraints are, start to brainstorm solutions, create a plan, implement that plan, and then evaluate that plan and maybe tweak some things or redo some things and go through that process all over again. So that's the system. And as I've worked with young people in the system, they're willing to go through it and keep trying it. When I think about that, how are we teaching problem solving in there? The questions that we ask in there as they're going through this process, because inevitably we all get stuck on something. So how do you help kids work through that? And you're not giving them the answer, but it's that training them to figure it out on their own and helping them see they have a system for how to fix that problem. And so questions and support within that and those kind of feed into the other topics or the other critical elements. But those things really do, when you create your own system of teaching problem solving for the learning, help the learner understand and be successful at problem solving. And the one nice thing about engineering and why I think we're all engineers is because we all have problems to solve, and there's always different constraints and different limitations that we have to work through. So there's never a perfect answer. There's the answer that's best given the materials that we have. And so I appreciate Thomas Edison's quote, I've not failed. I've just learned 10,000 ways that something won't work. And that's what we're teaching young people is you're not failing. You're just learning how to make something work either better or work in general. So that concept of learning from your failure and understanding failure isn't throw your hands up and give up, but failure is something you learn from is a really powerful notion for not just young people, but for adults as well.
Margo, tell us a story of where you've seen this system happen with young people.
Yeah, we've started doing Rube Goldberg machines. And so within our 4-H program, and a Rube Goldberg machine is you take a really simple task and you make it as complicated as possible by adding a variety of steps. It's really fun videos on Rube Goldberg. But I've had the opportunity to work with young people. They've been creating a Rube Goldberg machine and work with them as an evaluator of their machine. And one of the best, kids learn in different ways when they go through this. And one of the best examples I can think of is a team that was at the state fair, and I'd seen them the year before. I judged them the year before. They were a first-year team the year before, and they succeeded in their Rube Goldberg machine. We always ask as judge, what'd you learn through this? How do you solve problems? And they'll talk through different problem-solving methods they use. But my favorite answer, the one that sticks with me, we all need these aha moments. This team said, what'd you learn from last year that you applied to this year's machine? And their response was, you know, last year when we had a step that wouldn't work, we just kept trying it over again and over again and over again. This year, when we ran into a step that didn't work, we tried something different. So yeah, right? Yeah. Something so simple, and that's where a skilled facilitator, when young people are working through a problem, will see them get stuck and help them find what's working right with it. You know, what's working really well, what's not working. But sometimes just asking the simple question of what could you do differently to make it work a little better is just that push to help people get unstuck.
The second one that you talk about then is feedback.
So, and again, that's that facilitator showing young people that they're doing things right, helping them get unstuck. So you're providing feedback in there rather than just giving them a problem and saying good luck with it. But sometimes it's really even helping young people realize that what they're doing is a problem-solving process, and that's part of the process to have things not work and to have to try it over again, to consult a teammate and figure out a different way to do things. And the other thing, and so thinking about examples in Rube Goldberg, we ask them to do 10 different steps of energy. And by the time they come to their county fair or whatever event they're showcasing at, their 10 steps will be perfect and it looks really good. But if you ask them, so did it work right on the first time? No. Did it work right on the second? It takes them several times to keep going and before they'll get it right. And there's, you know, some innate desire to keep working on that simple problem. But sometimes that's also where a facilitator or your buddy, your teacher, your facilitator, your guide can help you realize, keep going, you're almost there. Giving them some of that positive feedback and helping them think, what if we tweak this? Have you thought about this? Provides that little impetus to get them over the hump and get them to where they want to be.
And I wondered if this is the piece that when you were working with Ori, that really put the light on for you because you weren't giving him feedback.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. Or the feedback that I had been giving him was exactly, yep, you did it right. Yep, you did it wrong. Rather than you're almost there. Give it, let's try this and figuring out ways to give him a positive feedback of maybe now breaking the problem down into a simpler problem so that he finds success at that one step so that he's willing to keep trying. It's like, I found success at that one step. I'll keep trying things to figure out what's the next step for success. And the other thing that I think that's important in this too, in problem solving and providing feedback is particularly in young people, but I think probably somewhat still as adults, our brains are still growing and our neural pathways are still developing really intensely in young people. That by training people or helping young people in particular when they're developing these neural pathways to learn that they can be successful at problem solving, are we creating those neural pathways to help them be creative and keep trying to not give up, to be persistent in trying what's it going to take to get me through this situation?
And I think that leads us to your third critical component here. After you have worked through an engineering systematic way and you've provided lots of feedback, this takes time.
It does. It does. And that's, you know, as teachers, and we find this in 4-H too, when young people are doing a project, it's really easy to just show them how to do it. That's so much more efficient. You give them your knowledge and they have your knowledge and they go on and do a wonderful project. But the time to have that you take to let them figure that out on their own, to be supportive along the way, allows them to then take what they've learned and apply it to different things and to maybe even have developed a deeper learning by learning it on their own rather than you telling them this is the right answer or the right way. So it just takes, when you're planning that problem solving teaching, you've got to account for it's going to take longer. So in 4-H, we talk about developing a better young person rather than a better product. And to develop that young person really takes more time. The product's the easy part.
And what a great reminder, because so often as adults, we have 1 hour here. We're meeting for 7 weeks for this amount of time. And this particular experience needs to happen in this amount of time. And you are describing another way of working with young people.
Exactly.
Well, that fourth critical component then is team.
And there's some research that, not surprisingly, that when you work with a team, and it should be maybe a little obvious around problem solving, different people have different ideas to solve a problem. So looking to your teammate and not just being part of a team and saying, hey, what do you think? Really asking them, how would you fix this? So really looking to your team and understanding what are the strengths of your team. And there were some really, these are young kids in Rube Goldberg. They were three up to eighth grade when we had started this. And so there were some really young ones and they would just get it, that they would start identifying who on their team was really good with particular parts. And that would be their part of the machine to work on. So understanding how we can use the strengths of the people around us, really helpful for problem solving.
Yeah. And for each young person to identify their own strengths.
Right. Right. And this was a particular challenge for me with Ori, because we're a team, but I'm not communicating with him right, and he's not communicating with me. So when I thought about dog training with Ori, it was actually going and trying this activity in front of another trainer and getting feedback from another trainer on what else we could try or what one of us might not be figuring out from the other. So team doesn't have to be directly involved in your process, but getting feedback from others around you.
Well, thank you so much, Margot. And before we wrap up this podcast, I think we need to hear the final story on Ori.
So I had originally titled this problem solving, you're teaching problem solving. And then I was trying to be really catchy and funny at the end of, and so you can teach an old dog new tricks, meaning really it was me, you were teaching the new trick. But everybody then focused on the trick. And it wasn't so much a trick, but where I struggled with him, what the problem that he gave up on was he was supposed to learn how to go to a particular place. And so I had put a sheet down and I had broken the problem down. All I wanted him to do was put a front paw on the sheet and I'd reward him. And what I wanted him to do was to build from there, and then he would get 2 feet and I'd give him a treat. So that building, but he just couldn't figure out that the one paw on the sheet was what I was asking him to do. And he gave up. So I went to another trainer and her suggestion was, the sheet isn't enough for him to discriminate. So we gave him a raised platform. So it was really clear that he was putting his foot on this raised platform, and he got it. The 1 foot immediately, 2 feet immediately. Eventually he got all four. He knew that when that place, that bed was out in front of him, he needed to get on that. So that problem solving, my teaching was one, breaking it down into critical elements. And I knew I wanted to do 1 foot at a time. Giving him time, I needed to allow him the space to figure it out. The feedback, I was getting pretty good on that. But the part that I really needed was an outside person. I needed another teammate to help me problem solve through this. So in the end, when I figured out what I needed, how I needed to change my teaching or what I needed to add, he picked it up really quick. And my dog is smart.
Yes. And well-loved. And I thank you for bringing his story and him into both your blog and into this podcast. And so appreciate your love of science and what you bring to our Center for Youth Development 4-H program and sharing your insights with all of us in this podcast. So thank you so much, Margo, for doing this podcast with me.
Oh, it was really my pleasure. Thank you, Carrie.
Well, as we bring this podcast to an end, always know that this conversation doesn't have to end here. You can find us on www.extension.umn.edu/youth. And that's where we have research, training, events. Always go check out our Minnesota 4-H program if you aren't involved in it already. We also have our Youth Development Insight blog that we've been referring to throughout this podcast. And I do invite you to comment and engage in Margo's blog post along with the other colleagues who have already been in there. That's going to wrap up our podcast. This is Carrie Robidoux, joined by Margo Bowerman from the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Youth Development. Please tune in again soon.